Welcome to the Cops, Criminals, and Christ podcast, where we will hear interesting stories and unique perspectives about the work of cops, the world of criminals, and how faith plays a role in the lives of both. Dale Sutherland was an undercover cop and a pastor for many years and will share interesting stories and perspectives and interview guests. I'm your host, his daughter, Kristen Crew. Come join us to learn more about these powerful forces and how they shape the lives of people just like you. Let's dive in. Welcome back to the Cops, Criminals, and Christ podcast with Dale Sutherland. And I'm the host, Kristen Crew. I actually got to witness this life of his as an undercover cop and a pastor, the duality of that from the perspective of his daughter. But now I am grown and we're kind of revisiting his top cases. Now looking back, so I kind of have this insider look, but also am kind of an outsider asking questions about a case that I wasn't a part of and definitely was protected from a lot of what went on. So what is our next most interesting case?
Probably would be this time that I infiltrated a group of guys that were out committing robberies and shooting their victims in some cases. And I became a part of the crew.
What era was this? Where were you?
It was just in 2011. I got a call from an informant that the guys who had just committed a robbery in a jewelry store robbery where they shot the shop owner, wanted to sell him some jewelry. And so the informant called me and said, "You want to buy it instead of me?" I said, "Heck yeah."
So this is a guy you already had a relationship with who was kind of working on the streets and working with the police. And now you're involved to say, "I want in on that," to try to build the case to eventually make bigger arrests.
Yeah, I want to catch the crew that's committing these robberies, these violent crime, right? So that's what I did. So I told the guy, I said, "Listen, and this is a scam I learned from ATF, Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, up in New York City and in Miami. They'd run these cases for a long time. And what you basically do is you convince the robbery crew that you have addresses and places for them to go rob. I know more drug dealers than they do, and I'll get the door open as long as they stick to me, and then I'll take them in. And I record the conversations, I record the plan, and when we get ready to go actually do the crime, we arrest them."
So how long was this case? He connected you right away, and then what happened from there?
Well, it was funny because these guys were so dangerous, we ended up going really fast because they came to meet me that night. So really that same evening, I'm with the guys. Of course, we didn't know which one had done the actual pull the trigger, but as we're talking about it, we buy some stuff from them, and then I start bragging to them like, "Hey, you know, I'm no tough guy. This is the way I came at it. But I know lots of people that owe me money that I would love if you go get me money. Just give me a piece of it." And I convinced them that I could do that and they could trust me through my buddy.
Did you go the "I'm no tough guy" route because you didn't think you could pull off the tough guy? Or was that like a "I'm going to boost you up so you feel good"? And can
well, there's a basic reason. Number one, I'm not a tough guy. Number two, Andy, if you try to be something you're not, it's kind of stupid. So it makes it harder, even in an undercover world. So I'm not a tough guy. Secondly, the other reason was because I wanted to keep them from killing me. And I'll explain to you why. If they think I'm also another shooter, another guy who carries a gun, and I'm always telling them about my crew and all that, which we do sometimes, then it creates something where they say, like, "I can't even rob this guy, because if I do, somebody else is going to come after me." So what they do is they shoot you instead of, "I'm a soft, I'm no trouble for you, man. You guys are the real guys. You guys are the real criminals." Okay. It also gives them reason to talk more.
Right, right.
Why would they talk to me if I'm tougher than them?
You're no threat, basically.
I'm no threat, man. I'm no trouble. Mm-hmm. You guys are, whew, and I just pump them up all the time. And how do you do that? How do you shoot people? I don't understand it. You know,
which is kind of a life skill. It goes a long way with people in general.
Yeah,
to,
I suppose,
like,
yeah.
Puff people up. They love that. Yeah. But it makes sense in this case for safety and all the reasons. So were you pretending to be someone at this point? Or what was your identity for this case?
Yeah, I was actually working in another long-term operation like we just like we've talked about in other episodes where I was in an undercover. But this time I was a owner of a recording studio. And so they came down to my recording studio, much like we're sitting here today, and they came down and met me there, and they bragged, and I do. But it's just like, it's interesting, you say, my ministry work and my undercover work really do, some of those skills come across in the sense that even if you're counseling somebody's family or you're counseling a guy or a girl, you're trying to help them. What I learned was, and actually my wife points out, is you need to let people talk. People want to talk about themselves. They don't want to talk about you. They want to talk about themselves. So same way in undercover work, let them talk. That's where the crimes are committed. They're not committed if I talk. There's no crime.
So you're just, using that to get confessions the whole time you're with them.
I want to get, so I'm not very good, honestly. I would try to get confessions like when I worked homicide, and I'd go into the room, and I can remember interrogating this guy who'd committed a couple of murders, and I'm in the room with them and I'm talking. I walk out of the room and I say to all the detectives, I don't think he did it. I mean, I believe him. Next guy walks in the room and he confesses to him. It was really embarrassing. That happened to me a lot. I wasn't very good at getting confessions in that context, but in an undercover way, just getting people talking, that's where I had some more success.
Kind of being one of them and the mode of...
And actually not being one of them, being like an outsider, asking them what their world's like. You know, what? How would you do that? How do you guys live this way?
Right, right. Okay, so you meet with them that night.
Yep. I meet with them that day. Then they tell me, hey, we want you to meet the rest of the crew. We're like, wow, I guess that worked. So we ended up at some crappy little bar in PG County where it was like their bar. It was only like four booths and it was their bar. It was all the guys from the crew in there. And we went in and we stuffed in this booth and we started to talk with another undercover.
You're asking for things from them or they're offering things. What is the promise between you guys that keeps the conversation going?
They want me to come out there and convince their bosses that I can get them good work.
And good work being?
Good people to rob where they can make money. Okay. It's all about money. That's the other thing. If you want to win in undercover work, it's real simple. Just keep putting money on the table. Money is tempting. We all like money,
Yeah. Yeah. And so this whole time you're thinking these guys are dangerous on the streets. We got to get them off the
dangerous.
Streets.
Well, while we're there talking that day with them, in our second meeting, the main guy says, hey, we're going to rob a bank up in Philadelphia. I said, oh, really? I said, I can help you with that. So what I said was, I can help you rob the bank. Let me tell you why. I'm white. These guys were Latino. I said, I'm white. Nobody will think anything of me. And I can take my money. I'll go in there. I'll make a deposit even. I'll open an account. And by doing that, I'm going to get to see the bank. I'm going to get to walk it for you. I can videotape it inside there. They're never going to bother me. I'm just a white businessman, starting to open an account. And they said, really, really? So sure enough, we went up to Philadelphia and we ended up going to the bank. I'm going to go in the bank while they're sitting in the car waiting for me. I go in, I record it, videotape inside the bank. It's like, on my BlackBerry or something. And I come back out and I tell them, now here's the problem. If you tell these guys it's easy to rob, well, what if they would have just taken their guns and run up in there?
Right.
I got a problem.
Yeah, I'm concerned right now.
Yeah. So as I get there, I got to calm them down and tell them, you don't want to do this now, though. We got to set this up. We got to set this up because I know they get deposits on this day and I'm going to figure all that out. Well, anyway, while I'm talking to them, I also tell them there's a cop in there, though. There's cops in there. So you can't go right now. We got to figure out when the cops are
there. And you're
just
lying.
Oh, I'm totally lying. Yeah. And they say, this is the scary part. They say, oh, don't worry about the cop. We'll just kill him and keep going.
And you're still keeping your cool in that moment as the cop undercover. You're cool. Okay.
Yeah, I'm loving it because they're saying stuff. They're saying more where they're never going to be able to say in their defense. They didn't know what was happening.
Right.
This was their idea, not mine.
Now, did you alert the Philadelphia police? Or y'all just went up there rogue?
We did. No, we did. Different times I didn't. Like when I went up to the county to talk to these guys and all, we didn't let them know. But in this case, because it was a bank and we were concerned, we talked to the police up in Philadelphia and the FBI up there.
Right, for so many reasons.
One of the worst things, but one of the worst and hardest things to do is work with other cops from other agencies. It's just like a bunch of guys trying to prove to each other they're the toughest, best,
Right.
And you're in our place and it's very challenging.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's why you don't do it sometimes.
Right. So this case you did. So you convinced them not to. They say, oh, we'll just kill the cops. What happens from there?
We tell them, hey, listen, we got to plan this better. So let's get back to Washington and then we'll plan together to do it. The reason, and for a week, we're doing these kind of meetings, And then the reason we got to take them down is, one of them calls me and says, hey, we're heading up to Philadelphia tomorrow morning. We'll see you tomorrow night. So wait. You don't want to rob the bank yet.
So you were like, well, I'm not taking any chances. We got to go in and arrest him.
Yeah, my boss says, I might have probably taken a little longer. I thought I could talk him out of it. You know,
sounds on brand for you. Yeah.
I always felt like I could, my problem, even in ministry, is feeling like I can push people a certain, I feel like I could do it, you know. But anyway, that day we had to cut it that day. And so I had to tell them I had a better job for them here. So I had to create a new job.
And this is on the fly. You're on the phone.
Yeah,
and you're just thinking on the spot. I got a better job.
And I should say me and this other undercover who
was you didn't work
fantastic.
Alone.
The second best undercover I ever worked with. Just remarkable. And he was so good, you know. And so anyway, together we're coming up with this. And I was ideas and trying to think it through. And then I would go in because I was a supervisor. I'd go in and fight with the bosses and try to convince them. And I might... You talk about where the rub is, faith and work. Mm-hmm. Truth is, I lied to my bosses a lot. And that was that, you know, I was justifying in my mind, but it was a real bit of a struggle as the pastor.
Right. I see that.
Because I couldn't tell them what I was doing and they'd get nervous, you know.
Yeah.
I was making their day better, I felt like.
Telling
them less.
Yeah. This is a rub for sure. But so you go in and you tell them you got a better job here and then you swoop in. Where do you go get them to arrest them? What do they end up with?
So we rented another warehouse and this was on a street that was totally closed off. And so we called and we met with the SWAT team. We set all this up because these had real bad guys. And we got this great situation where they could block both sides of this little street once they came in. So we told the guys, hey, meet us around the corner. So we meet at a place. Now we're creating a job. We're creating people to rob. So we say, we're eating at this Mexican restaurant. We're eating. And these guys are like, let's go rob the guys. What are you doing? And the SWAT team is like, no, we're not ready yet. So we say, okay, why don't you guys get in the car? We'll drive. Cause they were ready to roll.
Right.
So we said, let's get in the car. We're going to drive you by the place we're going to rob. Now at this point I had no place to rob, nothing. But I needed to kill some time.
Right.
So me and the other undercover just start driving. And then we find a building. We're listening to them the whole time. Wait, come, or whatever. Wait, give us more time. So I just drive up to some building and I say, okay, third floor apartment on the corner. That's our spot. Now, of course, you're thinking, geez, I hope we get these guys because God forbid they're going to go up there and rob this paper.
Right. Yeah. So then what happened?
Well, we kept talking, drove them back to the warehouse.
Okay.
And then in the warehouse, we had the video cameras all set up and everything. They came in and we gave them like a big white laundry bag, so that we could see on the video, hey, you guys take this with you because you're going to put the stuff in there because we want to get everybody committed. And then I brought a bulletproof vest with me and I told them, hey, here's a bulletproof vest, because I also told them I would have guns out in the cars. So I was going to give them the bulletproof vest. And that way they'd feel like if somebody tries on a bulletproof vest, they can't say, I didn't know what they wanted me to do.
Right.
See what I mean? The problem was the SWAT team was very unhappy because, of course, I didn't tell them I was giving the criminals a bulletproof vest right before they were about to get arrested. So they were very unhappy with me.
So every
But it worked great. It made great video.
Right. And every move you make, you're thinking how to build the case and prove with beyond reasonable doubt that they knew what they were doing.
You don't want to put some guy in jail who happened to come along and it was his cousin and he's like, what are we doing?
Right.
So we look at every guy. We'd say, hey, are you in for that? I mean, are you good with this? You know, we're going to go rob these guys. You say it so everybody can hear. And then I hand them a vest, you know.
And they're like, I'm in. Yeah.
Now, the other thing we did is we had a beautiful undercover with her, also fantastic, who was in there. And her job was to hug all the guys, because all the guys want to hug the beautiful girl. Hug all the guys and find out if they had guns on. Because the guys had all agreed not to bring their guns. We were going to provide the guns. So mm-hmm. that'd keep it safer. But instead, out of seven guys, three of them were armed at that moment when we were in there with them.
Wow. Yeah, it's just interesting how every move you make is constant thinking on your feet, constant assessing, constant trying to build a case while also trying to stay safe, keep others safe, and get the arrest done. So that's they the swooped in and arrested them before anything happened.
So the scam was you had to get them out the door to get them arrested, right? Because what we decided, SWAT team and everything, it's too dangerous to arrest them in a small room with the cops in there, with the undercovers in there. So the idea was, could you, Dale, can you get them out of the place without you going outside too? So that way they could close off the street. And so what we did was we said to the fellas, hey, fellas, let's go. And we're coming, and then made sure they were in front. And as soon as the last one walked out the door, we quick slammed the door and locked it. And then we, the three undercovers, stayed inside. And the cops outside threw, it was like a war zone because they threw a, what we call a flashbang. Mm-hmm. So several percussion grenades. They don't really cause anything, but they're loud, really loud. So you hear pow, pow, because they had the whole street. There was nobody there.
Right.
So they took them down. There was a shot fired. The bad guys were very surprised.
Any injuries?
No, nobody was hurt. Nobody was hurt.
Okay.
Yeah.
They get jail time?
The fun part that was injured was we had an FBI car, an undercover vehicle, and the FBI, these agents had been some challenging, and the FBI vehicle they did, the SWAT team were dumb, and they broke out all the windows of the FBI vehicle while they were looking for the bad guys, because they ran every which way. And we thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah, it was only the FBI car that got them.
Yeah, it was the only FBI car, it wasn't an MPD car.
Right, right. So they got jail time, or how did that end?
Yes. Several of them confessed. One ended up going, the head guy, again, got a break, went out to EDVA, went out to federal court in Virginia, and he only got 5 years.
Wow.
But the rest of them got some serious time.
Did you follow the cases through their jail time? Were you concerned that they would come out and hate you? I'm sure they figured it out over time.
Instantly. For sure. Yeah.
So was that a concern for you when all these guys got out of jail?
No. I mean, you know, in criminal world, there's an understanding. They do what they do. We do what we do. 95% of the criminals, they don't like us. We don't love them. But we at least realize that's our job. What are we going to do? I'm not mad at drug dealers now. I'm not mad. But in this case, you worry in the sense that they had already had a propensity to fire, to shoot guns.
Mm-hmm.
So a little bit more, but no, not much of a concern there. We don't generally mix worlds. And I pray every time we put guys away, I would pray that God would send a chaplain to reach them for Christ while they're in the jail. And I've had several guys happen. It's happened like that.
Yeah, it seems like two of your motivating factors were like to legitimately keep the streets safe and focus on the higher crime, and then also always wanting those around you to know the Lord through even the criminals or whatever. Like, everyone needs the same hope. What did that look like with your coworkers during this time? They know you're lying. You mentioned being in bars. Was there an understanding that, like, you gave a little bit maybe on some of your like ways you wouldn't act outside of work? Outside of work, you were never finding yourself in bars, and you're like, we tease that you're a prohibitionist. You like hate alcohol. Mm-hmm. It never seemed to blur those lines in many ways. Mm-hmm. So how did you navigate that even just with your coworkers? Yeah.
The prohibition gets a bad name, by the way. It's really a great time in our history. Okay. So, but the truth is, it was weird because I would go to church and I would be telling, at that time I was youth pastor, and I'd be telling kids, don't do these things. Don't do this. Don't do this. Then I would go to work and I would do this and do this and do this, all three things as an undercover officer. I suppose that was some of the, funny, double-edged. So you just
hilarious.
Ask the Lord, you just ask God. And I remember meeting with one of my pastor friends off, and I asked him, say, hey, can I do this and do that at the same time? And the idea was, what scripture, what God gives you to do. Like, I mean, think about it, arresting these guys for that guy who got shot at the jewelry store. Do you think he really cares that I used foul language when I was negotiating with them? I don't think that was
confession
the issue.
Right here.
Yeah, there
use
you
foul
go.
Language on the
yeah.
job. You heard
yes,
it here first.
Yes. Yeah. One time, the worst thing I ever, stupidest thing I ever did, I was bragging in the middle of a drug deal. I was bragging about sex with this girl. And I was really foul language and this girlfriend of mine and all this. Well, we get to the federal court. And while we're in federal court, the judge is about 900-year-old woman. She's up there. And you have to see federal court. It's big. It's very intense. Big jury. They have speakers all around the thing. And then they start playing this tape. And instead of me just talking, I did the recording with the idea, like, here's $13,000. You're giving me a kilo of cocaine. But in all the talk, you know, you're on the phone setting it up and all, I'm trying to make excuses for why I wasn't there. So I was saying I was with this girl. I'm over here. I'm doing mm-hmm. this. And now this lady is listening to me say this foul language and talk about mm-hmm. a girl. And she's up there looking down at me. I said, I'm never doing that again on recording. I never did either.
Not worth it.
No, it was worth it. Even though I knew it was a job and everything, it was, you know, you look at the jurors, you look at her, you're like, this is really made me feel pretty awful.
Did you have like rhythms to literally put a stop, but when you left work to when you got home, or you left work, you came to our like cheer competitions, or you left work and went up to lead a staff meeting with the church staff to transition your kind of like mind and stuff to that? Or was it just pretty clear in your head? You just were that. And then
Jesus came to save our souls and to change our spirits. It's everything in the book. It's love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind. It's love. It's our intentions, our hearts. And so if you think of it this way, whether I was a policeman or I was doing this job or the other job, I had to have a heart that loved God and loved other people and trying to live by what the Lord overall wants me to do. So anyway, I didn't find it that much of a transition because I was still trying to think spiritually. To be honest with you, I was praying before deals. I was praying during deals. I was praying after deals. No kidding. And I really did feel like God was with me. I know he was with me while I'm doing the deals. So then I'm with him when I'm sharing a staff meeting. It's just not, you know, yes, right. Terribly different, but you know.
Yeah. No, I remember us praying at home for your cases, now realizing how little I truly knew about what was going on. Yeah. But I do feel like you integrated it in a way that integrated your whole life without crossing lines of at home making us feel unsafe or acting inappropriately outside of work or whatever. So somehow you did it, but you felt that tension. And I think it wouldn't make sense not to feel that tension.
Sure, of course.
That would be more problematic than like, yes, I felt that tension and still the Lord.
Yeah, right. If I was like, oh, this is cool, that'd be a problem.
Yeah, this is not good. That's super interesting. What is our next case we'll be hearing next time about?
Well, I think the next one is to talk about where I almost got killed. Like I shouldn't be dead. There was no way I survived this.
Okay. We will end with thanks be to God that you are still alive. And in the next episode, we will talk about that case where he should be dead. Thanks for tuning in, and we will see you next time.